Chapter 1. The Mountains of Samnium. Beauty lies upon the land like a visible light, for the land is Italy. But it is an Italy we seldom see, a place of northern aspect. Monstrous mountainsides heave upwards, clothed with fir forests, upward to where the bare cliffs soar against the sky. The valleys are narrow clefts, purple or black in their depth. In the wider vales, sheep paths go winding along the hillsides, tiny parallel paths, too narrow for human foot, cut deep by the knife-like hooves of goat and ewe. They are the only sign of human habitation. In later centuries, these hills will be crowned with monastery, abbey, castle, and the lower hill with its town, like a nest of turrets within the circling wall, giving the whole scene a meaning, an aspect of thought, of human effort and romance. But now, the vista is utterly alone, menacing. The mountains are withdrawn into themselves and have no commerce with the littleness of man. The air comes sharply chill, breathing that almost arctic fragrance of fir trees basked in the sun. Yet strangely, over this northern coldness arches the brilliance of an Italian sky. Oh, our sky, but that is always bright, say the loving Latins. So now, in this ancient Samnium, the fir forests take on purples unbelievable. The high cliffs are glorified with golden light, and the far distances melt into amethyst and violet, like dream places of the gods. Light is light, and is in itself almost a divinity. Halfway up a wooded mountain, a hut leaned against a cliff, viewing to the full this passionate loveliness. It was, even for that ancient day when it stood there, a hut of antique form. Woven of wattles and daubed with mud, roofed with the same, such huts the earliest inhabitants of Europe had made for themselves before the Romans came, and even now in remote places far from Rome, this manner of building lingered. Inside the hut, all the hill beauty was quenched like a candle. Windowless, dim, and the space of it almost filled with two upright looms. It was close, smelling of sheep wool piled high in baskets, and of the heated bodies of the workers. A woman and a child we would call them, but to the Romans they were two women. The younger, 12 years old, was of the marriageable age in Roman law. The older woman worked steadily, pacing before her loom. She might be called beautiful, with her faint reminder of the grave reliefs on the Sacred Way in Athens. But she was no rounded, well-fed matron, but thin, aged before her time, and stooped as weavers grow to be. The child worked with energy and swiftness, now bending as she threw the shuttle through the warp, now darting as she caught it on the other side and threw it back again, now stooping as she lifted the level rod which held the thread ends in groups for the pattern, jerking each rod forward in its turn. So she darted like a dragonfly, and was like a dragonfly for thinness and wary impatience. For this industry, these two received no pay. They were slaves.